when did this podcast move from talking about history to giving life advice? I'm not quite sure, but I keep finding myself falling into different pathways and footnotes about trying to just live a life. In that world, I want to talk a little bit about being obsessive, about things that I care about, even things I probably shouldn't care about, and how I deal with getting them done or never done. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Sitting in various places in my life are huge rooms full of many things to do. It's ranged everywhere from my shared apartment with my brother, to a dining room, to a shipping container, to an entire warehouse. Places that instead of being purely storage, function as massive to-do lists that sit in front of me, that I might pass all the time, or walk through on my way to get one item, and which call out to me that it's time for me, perhaps, to start thinking about doing something. The first lie that I tell myself is that I'm not quite doing enough, that I'm not taking an appropriate amount of time to knock down these to-do lists, and as a result, I'm failing myself, failing others, failing to do what needs to be done, which I promised. It's only been through years of self-reflection and falling back into the trap that I realize none of it, really, is a promise. It's a wish. It's a hope. It's trying to do at least the most basic part, to preserve and hold on to something for a little while longer, to keep it out of the hands of garbage piles and discards and tag sales, and then hopefully find an audience, a willing donor, a willing destination, a willing future owner or caretaker who will continue the story. Way back when, somebody gave me a truckload of magazines, newsletters, and journals, and I filled my dining room with these documents. I went to comic book stores and bought clear plastic bags and backers to make sure that they had some sort of proper storage, that they would then go into boxes the right size of those journals and magazines and newsletters, and then, ideally, myself or somebody else would turn them digital, because in the faith that I run in, digital is heaven. Digital is where things are destined to be if they're good, if they are free of sin, or so full of sin that they need saving. You turn them into bits and then transfer them up into the network, the invisible network of the world, to be shared by thousands, millions, and decades hence. In one way, this is a goal, but in another way, it's a leap. It's a leap where you think what you're doing is the best thing to do. Only time will tell if that makes any sense. As I'm turning things digital or helping other people turn things digital and get them into the Internet Archive, thankfully, things are available immediately. We're not filling a bucket on a hard drive and waiting for that go sign, that signal, the starting gun, to make it publicly available. When I deal with people who are sitting on a hard drive of data and they ask what to do, my answer is immediate. Give me a place to put them. Let me teach you how to use our client and get these into an Internet Archive item as soon as possible. This is what I do as a disciple of the digital way. But just because this has worked for thousands of CD-ROMs, has worked for hundreds of thousands of issues of magazines and online PDFs converted into a readable form at the archive, doesn't mean it's the only way. and especially, and I can't stress this enough, a sign that anything that hasn't walked this path is a failure. That's wrong. It's unfair. It's inaccurate. We have no way of knowing what's going to be the most important thing in the world, and while I then believe that we shouldn't pass judgment on what's passing through, it's therefore really unfair to turn to people who don't have that outlook and ridicule them. In the position of my digital faith are the pages, really the verses, of the story of turning things digital. Because all these items have an analog world, a printed page or a magnetic piece of plastic, there's some debate, a lot of debate, over what the ascension should be. You can't bring out a piece of paper in front of my kind and not have to hear chapter and verse about dots per inch, file format, and the chosen best compressed container. Are you a member of the Zip tribe? Perhaps you like tar. Or maybe you just think a directory is sufficient to get everything together, and you want to let it lie as it was found. The ludicrousness of the fight in between these different ideas is matched only by the futility. There will always be a better level of scanning years down the road. There will always be better compression, easier analysis. We're seeing this come true as analytical engines are starting to make the news, when it's simply a field of algorithms moving over text and video and writing and finding similarities and repackaging them for easy retrieval. Through all of this, though, comes the obsession. That feeling that I have and have had for many years, that I stand at the fulcrum of the past and the future, that I hold in my hands, in my decisions, in my command line, the mantle of the preservation of these items in perpetuity. If I fail to remember a certain command line option or a certain approach to compression or fixing up an image, it will stand forever with my substandard mark like a white scratch across a surface from the key of a careless holder. The pressure, when you frame it like this, is enormous. Maybe when I was younger, I could afford to do this to myself, that I could look at every frame, every piece of paper, every completed conversion, and litigate myself into a shivering ball of fear that something could be done better. I used to have these discussions all the time with like-minded friends about interlacing, about capturing every part of the magnetic signal, to how we would ensure that we would not be laughed at by the people of decades hence for failing to recognize what would have been, what should have been, right in front of us. But I have proof that that's not really what's going to happen. As I look at really old scans, really old photographs, a whole range of historical materials that are on the archive, my thoughts don't travel to a blurry image or a substandard scanning job. It's really one of gratitude that in that moment, so long ago, somebody, maybe a chain of somebodies, ensured its ongoing existence to the point that we could see it now. It would be great to have 1600 DPI imagery of an old newspaper article. But if that newspaper article contains a family member's news or a name of somebody you were looking for, or maybe the proof that something existed when it did, I'll tell you that the transport mechanism, the caretakers that brought it to you, are angels. Here now, 10 years into my Internet Archive career, where I have seen all manner of contributions, internal work, and recently walking through the physical archives and studying how different things have been stored, handled, boxed up, wrapped up, and are prepped for a long-term storage, it's become harder and harder for me to knock on style. To say, you could have done it this way, you could have given it the white glove treatment and the moment-to-moment perfection of somebody who knows where everything is at every last moment. But instead, I look at these survivors, these pieces of what once was that tell us and guide us to where those things came from, and all that happens is that my heart opens and is full. Way, way too many times, I have a Discord conversation, or I witness one, where I watch somebody bring paragraph after paragraph of self-doubt or lashing out and talking about how things could have been done better. They're talking to people who, from 50 or 100 feet away, are the same person, but because they chose red instead of blue, because they set this one timing to 14 instead of 17, or failed in their minds to choose this codec over another, they consider themselves separate, not part of the tribe, enemies even. I've grown sick of this. I've grown sick of watching people take something that brings them together and find excuses to split themselves apart, to get angry about process, to get furious about choices. I deal with people frequently who have consensus ideas which work really well and aren't necessarily the only ones. If they were the only ones, there would be no option. There are a multitude of settings that you can't change because everybody has understood there's never been a need. And when I see folks raise their fists in fury, I'll admit I'll surround the fight and watch it go, but I feel like it has to come to a halt pretty quickly. Challenging an idea, challenging choices, is healthy. Revisiting decisions made before in a pursuit of making them better is great. It's a forward-thinking, open-mindedness that we can use. But falling into a dark hole of bitterness, of resentment, of isolation has resulted in no good at all. The ways in which I've watched people draw lines in the sand and take each other to task is matched only by the scenes, by the communities I see them in. ROM collectors talking about naming conventions, software preservationists arguing about bit order, video and audio collectors arguing about codecs and approach, and all of it crumbling over the years, until it's just some dirt underneath, some peat from which grows these canonical items that everybody enjoys looking at. Again, call it age. Call it an ironic outlook from somebody legendarily cranky and short-tempered. But when I see that somebody is looking for a piece of paper or a video game or an audio recording that represents some part of their own history, and they find some version of it, whether lo-fi bandwidth or a fuzzy scan, their elation, their ecstasy about this connection and retrieval overflows any gatekeeping dam that people are putting together. This is a wonderful discipline to have put myself into. When I was a systems administrator, the only job there was persistence, of bland dependability, providing a way for a few dozen machines to earn their money for their masters, to be able to serve out web pages to paying customers and ensuring that day to day, very little would change. What I do now has more fundamental meaning in 1 minute of one day than I think my entire career did back then. Every day, people find whatever digital artifacts, whatever pieces of scanned and recorded history we've turned into bits, and they download them, and they review them, and they remember. I get their fan mail. I get letters from people who stumble onto the BBS lists or the documentaries or things that are sitting in the stacks of the archive. And I'll tell you, honestly, every one of them gets read by me, and ultimately, they show me that the work is great, the work is good, the work is never done, and that, fundamentally, is okay. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Sembiance, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I don't have much other faith in my life. I don't really subscribe to a specific religion, but I bet there's probably some group out there that would claim me for the fact that I love people, ultimately. I fight with them. I have disagreements. Occasionally, I feel a hatred for some of them. But when I put hands to keyboard, I always ask myself for these invisible, unknown people of the present and the future, how can I do right by them? And give me the strength to follow through.